Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations, the podcast where curiosity meets connection. Thanks for joining as we discuss captivating stories and ideas and engage in thought-provoking conversations with experts, enthusiasts, and everyday people. We hope to ignite a curious spirit as we embark on a quest for understanding one curious conversation at a time. So let's jump in this together. Welcome to the world of Curious Conversations. Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations. We are your hosts, Carly and Mandy, and this week we are talking about execution. This episode is heavy, and some themes are controversial in nature.
We also want to mention that we will be discussing methods of execution, like botched execution, murder by violence, and other content which could be disturbing to our listeners, so please be advised.
Well, Mandy, I am excited to dive into this episode as we plan to talk about a case that you and I have been watching and following as it has unfolded. But before we dive in, we definitely want to share with our listeners this week's curious dish. This is part of our show where we dish about the most curious thing we've seen this week. So, Mandy, what you got?
Okay, so kind of going with the theme here, I want to mention that I watched the first season of True Detective, and it was amazing. Like, ooh, some of the best acting I have seen, maybe ever.
Okay.
So, seriously, I was pretty impressed. It's Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, and it did have this very intriguing storyline for, like, the murder mystery aspect. It was a little different. They kind of touched on everything. Weird, but I'd still say it's definitely a character-driven story, which I love. I love that sort of thing. And one of the strangest scenes included some antlers. So if that makes you kind of curious.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah. So what about you, Carly? Anything curious?
Well, you know, I did see something curious this week with you, actually. So I'm gonna do a little plug here. So you have a Facebook Live called The Collector. Can you give us a little plug about that? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. So the short version is it started sort of as a promo for a book I was working on, and then it turned into kind of its own standing thing. I do a little bit of a talk with people about their collections, strange collections, interesting collections, and have people share their items and the stories that go along with that. And I share something from my own personal collection. I do that on Thursdays at 8 on the Collector's page on Facebook, and also have that on YouTube by the same name. So it's always interesting. And yeah, you were just on. So tell your side of that.
I mean, I got my own show. You just really let me take over a whole collector. It was a lot of fun. You know, I got to show kind of some things that I have in my collection. I collect all those, just the weird oddities, and definitely something you and I have in common. But you showed something this week that was absolutely the most curious thing I've seen. You talked about purchasing oysters from a restaurant and finding pearls in them.
Yes.
not like take home and dig open oysters. Yeah. They were to eat.
Yeah, like bust your teeth with oysters.
I thought that was very curious, and I don't eat oysters, but I definitely want to order some and just dig through them, because that's a really cool thing for you to have now.
Yeah, so you just dive right in. If you're an oyster eater, you just dive right in, because they're really soft when they're fried the right way. And so I didn't expect anything hard. And yeah, that was 4-in-1. That's a lot of pearls.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool though.
Yeah. That was weird. That was definitely curious. I agree. Yeah. That was a great episode. I got a lot of good feedback on you being on there. So that was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's switch back over a little bit. I know this episode takes a darker turn than some of our first episodes, and so we'll just go ahead and step right into it. Tell us a little about who we're talking about today, Carly.
All right. Well, you know, today we're talking about Kenneth Smith. This is a gentleman who is scheduled to be transferred. He's at the Holman Correctional Facility that is in Alabama, and he will go to the death cell on January 24th, and straightforwardly named, this is a holding unit where condemned prisoners are placed. They're put there 2 days before their scheduled execution.
Okay, but this isn't the first time Smith has been, it's not the first time we've seen the death cell.
Yeah, absolutely. You are correct. So Smith is actually familiar with this as, this is something that he has been through before. So he was actually scheduled to be put to death using lethal injection. This was back in November of 22. And so they moved him just like they were supposed to into this holding cell. And while he was there, he did the whole nine yards. He had his last meal. He did say goodbye to his mom and he has a grandson. And then he proceeded to the death chamber.
Wow. Golly. So you're doing all that stuff. You think this is it, you know, we know he's still alive as of this recording. So that didn't go as planned.
Yeah, not at all. Prison officials unsuccessfully struggled for like 4 hours trying to find a vein suitable for the injection. And I mean, they suspended this guy upside down for several minutes. It was a real struggle. I mean, he talks about the ordeal and having, needles going in different parts of his body at the same time. They were just, very desperately and frantically looking for a vein to work. And ultimately they had to call it off. I mean, they were forced to admit defeat. But it left his body marked with numerous puncture holes.
Oh my gosh. I bet they were pretty shocked that they couldn't, that was their plan too, just to go on forward.
Yeah. Right.
And, unfortunately there's been plenty of botched executions throughout time and you hate to think of that, but it's estimated that 3% of U.S. executions in the period from 1890 to 2010 were botched.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So are you familiar with William Kimmler? Have you ever heard that name?
No, I have not.
Okay, so back in 1890, this is one of the more well-known cases of a botched execution. That was the first person to die in the electric chair, and it's interesting in a dark, morbid kind of way, but he was really calm, and he even said, he was quoted saying, "Gentlemen, I wish you all good luck. I believe I'm going to a good place, and I'm ready to go."
Oh, wow.
That's what you hope to feel like. If you can imagine such a thing, but anyway, it did not go well. When he was pronounced dead, somebody actually yelled out, "Great God, he's alive." And so they had to turn it back on like a redo. And people ended up really feeling sorry for him. Can you imagine you're watching this, somebody being electrocuted and then they're like, "Oh, it didn't take. Let's, do that one more time." And
that is odd though. I mean, if he's the first to die in the electric chair, there's already so many unknowns. So for him to say, "Hey, you know what? I'm ready to go," gosh, then to have to do a redo on something so horrific.
Yeah. I'm thinking this is the most morbid image you can think of. And somebody actually said, was quoted saying they could have done a better job on him with an axe. So if you're thinking of it in those terms, it was just a mess. Then you've got in 1945, Willie Francis, he was sentenced to death as a juvenile offender by the state of Louisiana. I don't know if you know about this, but it was for the murder of Andrew Thomas, who was evidently a pharmacy owner. And, there was all this question, whether he really did it or not, kind of this back and forth. But anyway, he was set to be executed in May of 1946 by an electric chair again. But the chair apparently failed because, get this, it was set up incorrectly by two executioners who were drinking the night before.
Oh, no.
Can you believe this? That's not checked. That's not sort of policed. But anyway, just moments before the shock, Francis, he thought it was the end. He's sitting there, he's waiting for his time to come. But little did he know that he would go on to live longer like Kevin Smith. So He had to actually, when this failed, he had to wait a whole other year. So as his case, it took him all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to try to get the death penalty turned around. But anyway, in 1947, he was killed this time. It was successful. But because of this unique scenario, I guess, he's often referred to as the teenager who was executed twice. That's
That's not something I want to earn.
Right. Oh my gosh. And so, but when it failed, they had asked him what it felt like that first time being shot. Because could you imagine the voltage there that's intended to kill you and you live on? I don't even know what you would be like. Mm. But he said the best way he could describe it was wham, zip. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm thinking, this sounds awful, but I'm thinking like, you know, the bug killers on your back porch or something. Yeah, when he says right. Something like that, I don't think I could joke. Like, maybe he wasn't joking, but that sounds kind of like you're just telling a story.
Yeah, right.
Oh gosh, he told him, he said it was like 1,000 needles and pins were pricking him all over. And he said his left leg felt like somebody was cutting it with a razor blade. I mean, this is just, he said he could feel his arms jumping at his side. And for a minute, he thought he was going to knock the chair over. And he said he was hollering for them to stop, you know. And somebody said, this is the one that got me. Somebody said that he called out, "I'm not dying." It's like if you were being put to sleep for surgery and you said, "It's not working. It's not working. Don't cut into me," you know?
Oh, gosh. You know? Oh, man.
Oh, no. It's really disturbing. So then they nicknamed the failed chair Gruesome Gertie.
I cannot imagine.
Yeah, we always got to have like a little disturbing humor or something. And name things, you know, Gruesome Gertie for the electric chair. But I'm thinking, did they use that same chair? I don't know the aftermath of that story. But anyway, like I said before, it was questionable whether he was even guilty or not, which just adds another factor.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, I want to know the protocol. You know, what are they doing beforehand and after, and are we, like you said, reusing the same chair, and what does that go through? And this was so long ago. You're talking about, you know, 1945. You know, I'm sure a lot has been updated since then.
I would think so.
Yeah, and you know, the Death Penalty Information Center website does admit that there's really no way of knowing how many innocent people have been executed in the United States. I find that very disturbing.
I guess they don't want to be held to a number, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I don't know. That would be a tough bit of information to put out and deal with, but you know, yeah. I watched a documentary recently about a guy named James Joseph Richardson. The documentary is Time Simply Passes, and it really caught my eye. I thought it would be something relaxing, you know, but it was not. Richardson, he was born in the 30s. He's a gentleman who was wrongfully convicted, and he actually was sentenced to death in 1968, and it was for the murder of his 7 children. So he had, just
what?
How heart-wrenching is that?
Oh my god.
He lost 7 kids. They died after eating their breakfast, which was poisoned. And at the time of the murders, he was working on a migrant farm. And so he had a wife. I think the oldest 2 children belonged to his wife, and he had kind of taken them in, and then they had 5 together. The oldest kids all went to school, the public school in town, and the 2 littles, they stayed at home throughout the day. And there was a lady that lived next door that would caretake for them. And so they had, you know, started this breakfast, and it's sitting on the stove, and the babysitter comes over and feeds all the kids, and the 5 older ones all go off to school. And then all the kids just start dropping, you know, and they're in their little classrooms. I absolutely cannot imagine, You know, so we've got a husband and wife team. They've lost 7 children. He is arrested. He was put on death row, and he had to do a walk to death row. So I don't know if you know this, but they actually have prisoners walk the hallway and they show them the room. And at this point they had him in the chair. They shaved his head, you know, and it's just, I think that would be nerve-wracking, but the purpose of it is to be a little more calming so they know what to expect the day of. But this guy was exonerated not too long ago. You know, it was, there's been a whole lot of advancement in technology, and they were able to revisit that case, and he was let go because he was innocent, you know. And how terrifying is that, that he sat in that death chair? There's got to be a lot of mental torture in facing death under those types of circumstances. So I imagine that Smith probably suffered the same thing.
Absolutely. You know, there's that movie years back with Billy Bob Thornton called Monster's Ball. I don't know if you saw that, but it talks about that, and it's a prison worker, and it's talking about that walk that they have to do, and how, you know, they even see it as like, give some respect to that person's last walk, and in facing all of that, because you got to recognize the humanity of it. You got to recognize the serious tone. And it's just, I don't know, there's so many different factors to look at with all that. And I can't, you know, I can't even imagine. But well, you know, how can they even be sure it's going to work this time?
Yeah, you know, just thinking back to the Smith case, I really don't think that there's any assurance of that. But they are looking at a completely different mode of execution. And this one is, you know, it's untested, which is unprecedented in the history of capital punishment in the U.S. And I feel like this is, you know, wow, potentially taking a turn. The technique, which has been deemed ethically unacceptable by veterinarians, to be used for euthanizing most animals, it involves death by nitrogen gas.
Okay, but so gas has been used before, but not nitrogen, is that right?
Right. Yep. So heated cyanide acid in 1924 was used for the first gas chamber. And I think 600 and something inmates since then in the U.S. have died by gas. The last American gas chamber execution was 1999.
Oh, really? 99. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what I know of gas chambers, I know it became common, like in, well, most famously in California, which installed its version at the, I think it was the Bay Area's San Quentin State Prison. Everybody knows that name. That was in 1938. From Oregon to North Carolina, there were prisoners that developed unique protocols, such as like coating a gas chamber doorway with Vaseline. I've heard of these things. It's just like the stuff you don't even have to think of. Like they were patted down from the gas. They had to pat down like the inmates' hair, their clothes afterwards, so that, you know, nobody got sick that handled the body. You know, you're not just thinking of the person who's been condemned to this, it's the other people who could easily be affected. And they said some of the prisoners were shaved and like even stripped of their underwear to lower the risk there.
Oh wow. You know, that, I mean, that makes sense. You got to think about the aftermath of that. Wow. Well, you know, cyanide gas works to prevent the body's cells from transforming to oxygen into fuel. Well, nitrogen gas, which is a normal component of air, it causes asphyxiation when no oxygen accompanies it to the lungs.
Right. Just reading any information on that throughout any of this, talking about that, I just get that little bit of smothery sensation, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Golly, when it's put that way. But yeah, so there's no chance that this is, I mean, this may or may not work, bottom line.
Right.
When you read on this particular thing, it literally says could cause death.
Yeah.
So could cause death. Well, then there's an argument that some have for, you know, is it humane? I mean, they said it could cause them to vomit and choke on it, and that could be this torturous death. And, here's another thing. So oxygen could seep in and cause him just to be in like a vegetative state. And then what? I mean, even if you don't care about his life or this guy, or, you know, you think he deserves it. Here's the part where somebody might say, so does the state take care of him, or they have to kill him again? I mean, there's practical things there like cost. And I mean, this whole thing's nuts. It almost makes you feel sorry for the guy.
It does. You know, until you kind of look into why he was put in prison 35 years ago, and then you can kind of see the other side of the story too, and your mind will feel absolute conflict. But March of 1988, a lady named Elizabeth Sennett, she was the wife of a pastor in Alabama in Colbert County, and she was fatally stabbed in her home. So she suffered numerous abrasions and cuts, but what ultimately took her life was she was stabbed 8 times in the chest and then once on each side of her neck, which is just horrific. Smith and an accomplice then proceeded to kind of ransack the home, and they were, you know, to make it look like a home invasion. A week later, her husband, the Church of Christ minister, his name was Charles Sennett, he took his own life. Detectives kind of started looking into an extramarital affair. There was some significant death, and a life insurance policy was taken out on the wife. So he was, you know, he put a hit out on his wife.
So this guy hired Smith to kill his wife so he could collect insurance money. Is that it?
Well, not quite. He hired a hitman who then hired 2 men to do the job for him, one of those men being Kenneth Smith. So during the trial, Smith did admit to being paid $1,000. That's it. The rest of the story is all hinged on a $1,000 payment. But, you know, Smith said that he was paid $1,000, and in turn, he agreed to rough up Elizabeth Sennett. But he did deny any injury that caused her death. So at that time, a jury voted 11-1 in favor of a life sentence. And this is where it kind of gets weird. A judge overruled their decision and he sentenced Smith to death row.
Okay. So did I understand that the judge that's the only one that has the ability to overturn a verdict in Alabama, right?
Yeah, a judge can overrule a jury verdict, but you know, I think that's very rare. And there's a lot of stuff around it. There has to be like insufficient evidence for a verdict. And honestly, I guess if we aren't allowing a jury to do its job, then the jury is irrelevant, you know, and that puts us in a place of going against the Constitution. Which says that, you know, you have a right to a trial with an impartial jury.
Oh my gosh. So there's so many parts to this. And you know, when you're telling the story, it's, you know, it's horrific what happened, and you're telling the story and it's like, you know, somebody paid somebody and all these, anytime you hear that kind of thing, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's somebody's life here. I don't understand. But it didn't make me think of Fargo. If you know that story, that's, you know, based on a crazy story. And it also made me think of more recently, Before the Devil Knows You, You're Dead. And it's like you talk about the botched execution. Well, this is a botched plan, you know, botched setup, it sounds like. And golly, we could look at so many things here. But well, listen, let's talk some more about this gas as an experimental method of execution. So were you familiar with this before, Carly?
Well, okay. So not entirely. This is called nitrogen hypoxia. And it's forcing the prisoner to breathe pure nitrogen at such high concentrations that it causes oxygen deprivation and eventually death. But this is not a brand new thing. It's just the aspect of it being used as execution. There's actually a doctor. It's Dr. Philip Nitschke. So he assists suicide by nitrogen pod. And this is, of course, not in the United States. This is his work is done in Europe and Australia. You know, and I think that's a very controversial subject all on its own. Some people are okay with assisted suicide, some are not, you know, and that all, you know, you can look into history books and read about, what was that, Dr. Kevorkian, you know, mm-hmm. and how much controversy that brought up. But this Dr. Nitschke has actually witnessed 50 deaths by nitrogen hypoxia. And he was brought in just to give some expertise on it. He was brought in by the lawyers of Mr. Smith. So this was, you know, okay. when they're trying to block that execution, they brought him in. They showed him the mask, which I thought was interesting, just to kind of get his take on it. He was a, you know, a key witness in that. And he said he could imagine scenarios ranging from like a quick and painless death to really one involving substantial suffering if anything was to go wrong. He was not a fan of the mask. You know, he has created pods, you know, and he said there's a higher chance of there being a leak, you know, than if it was like in a room or a pod or even a plastic bag, would be better than just this mask that they were planning to use. And so I don't know, you know, he spoke with Mr. Smith and he even went on the record to say, you know he wanted to hear, positive. He wanted to hear, oh, this is going to work great. But Dr. Nitschke said he just didn't feel like he could promise Mr. Smith that at all.
Well, okay. So here's a thought. When you're talking about all this and what it's been used for before with assisted suicide, then isn't this in turn sort of like a forced suicide and not an execution? I mean, think of it that way.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely you're adding more controversy onto this, but you are absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's got to, I guess he's got to breathe that in. He's got to, partake in this on his own, really. Where I don't really see what the difference is in the people who are using it for suicide.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess, I don't know. It's how you look at it, I guess, but I'm thinking, you know, in other ways, for execution, it's something kind of put upon the person. And, you know, I'd even heard, he said, and this is probably why he said, I'm not even going to help them. You know, I'm not going to help them with this.
Yep. He did say that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it is sort of like they're asking. And then I guess if you want to keep going with this train of thought, you could say, well, does that go against his, whether you think he should have them or not, we're set up with constitutional rights. And does that go against that if his religious belief, you know, doesn't, you know, all the feelings about suicide and I don't know, it just kind of seems like that's somewhere else they're stepping into some messy territory.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. Well, I can't imagine what, you know, he's feeling with this coming up, or, well, you know, maybe I can. I guess that's the thing, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we do get a little insight, you know, they have asked him what he fears most about being administered the nitrogen, and being the first, I mean, essentially a guinea pig in this type of execution. So his original statement was just a little generic, but still eye-opening. He said, you know, my fear is that it will be successful, and that you'll have nitrogen system coming into your state very soon. You know, that's what he was worried about. But he did follow that up by saying, throwing up in that mask, you know, that is what he feared. He said, if I do, nobody's going to help me. I'm going to drown in my own vomit and my wife will have to sit there and watch me.
Oh my gosh. Well, I know there's very conflicting ideas on this topic, you know, especially in regards to Kevin Smith, right? I mean, all kinds of thoughts here.
Yeah. You know, you can read through the comments in news articles and you're going to get a little bit of everything. You know, there was one that came from a gentleman who just, you know, his username was, I'm just saying, but he did say, you know, maybe that original botched execution and the fact that this is not a tested thing, you know, maybe that's a sign that this execution just isn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, I wondered if people looked at that in that way. I guess that's sort of hokey to some people, but I mean, it is odd that it's just everything sort of going against this. And I don't know if you're a fan of the old Twilight Zones, but I really love those. And there was this one, this brings it to mind. I think it was called Dust. Anyway, it's about this guy, and it brings some other things into play throughout the story. But this guy's getting ready to face execution. They're going to hang him in the street. This is like a whole Western theme. And, you know, the noose breaks. And the town's sort of spooked by that. And they just, they don't want to redo it. It's not that situation because, and obviously this is fictionalized, but, you know, it makes you consider that if it's, you know, I don't want to be so bold as to say an act of God. I don't know. But, you know, people who look at things like that and look for signs, it is something curious to talk about.
Right. Yeah. You know, it really is just stems in how you believe things work, you know, and do you believe in divine intervention or do you think that things just happen? You know, it depends, you know, and there's the comments from the other side too, you know, that same news article, there was a gentleman, Philip Becks, and his comment, it just stuck out to me. He said, if you don't like the accommodations, don't make the reservation.
Okay. Well, that's cut and dry. That's right.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get that. That's like the simple version, right?
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting to look at both sides. I've always done that kind of thing. I like to look at both sides. I like to talk about sides, people's opinions and all that, no matter what I feel personally. But, you know, when you think about that, I don't know if you've ever heard this. Somebody told me a long time ago about the and instead of but. Do you know what I'm saying when I say that?
Oh, no, you got to tell me more.
Okay. Yeah, that really doesn't give much at all, does it? So somebody told me a long time ago, and it's a really good point. So if you think of something conflicting, like a thought or an idea, we're bouncing off different thoughts here and, you know, mostly the scenario. But if you look at that, and you can automatically say something like, he did this awful thing, but I can feel for him. Or I really feel for him, but then again, he did this awful thing. So what I was told is that what you really should say is and instead of but. Because when you hold one idea, like picture it in one hand, well, to say but is almost like you let that idea go to get the next idea.
Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah. So when people, I mean, I think most people feel both things on multiples, maybe not on this, but on, you know, different theories, different stories. And so to say, and then it's kind of like he did this awful thing and I can feel for him. So you're holding both ideas in your hands. So, you know, of course there's plenty of people who can't feel for someone, but what I really mean personally is like the situation, any situation, how you can see both sides. So you use and instead of but.
You know, I love that. It's, you know, I think we're such a, you know, as a nation, as a people, we are divided on so many things, but I think it's because we have that but mindset of I feel this way, but my standard says this, you know, and there are some times where we need to just replace that with an and of, you know, I feel this over here. And I also feel this, you know, and I think that I definitely feel that in this case, there are some ands here for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And speaking of that, is he going to have a spiritual advisor with him? I know that's kind of the, you know, practice.
Yeah. You know, in the room during the execution, he will have an advisor, and it's Reverend Jeffrey Hood, who I believe is from Arkansas. So he began working with Mr. Smith, and he has developed a bond with him, and he describes it as a close bond. And so he does plan to be present during that execution. But Mr. Hood said in an interview, he was very fearful of what Mr. Smith might have to endure. You know, he said something about, you know, the physical restraints and that he might have to instinctively, you know, he's going to want to resist that execution attempt, and kind of what that might cause. You know, his biggest concern is it's not going to be peaceful. There's not going to be anything calm and peaceful about that. He said he thought it was important for people to realize that when you strap someone down, you can't expect them while choking to death to not resist. And so he's definitely worried about what that's going to look like, you know, and especially with Smith's wife being there and watching that. So, you know, Alabama's protocol says that a spiritual advisor cannot be in the chamber unless they sign a form, and it's an acknowledgement form ahead of time, especially with nitrogen hypoxia, because there's a risk there for anyone in that room. You know, if that mask moves, that was the fear of oxygen getting in the mask and prolonging that execution. Well, it's on the other side too. Then you've got nitrogen going out into the air. You know, there's a definite risk there. But, you know, Jeffrey Hood, he filed a lawsuit and he was challenging the use of nitrogen hypoxia because it does prevent him from doing his job and other spiritual advisors. They're having to risk their life to be in there with the condemned person, putting their own health at danger. So, you know, he said the rule in and of itself goes against a Supreme Court decision, which was made in March of 22, that, you know, requires states to allow a spiritual advisor to be present in those final, you know, those final moments.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at his side and, you know, somebody obviously innocent, and, you know, you're thinking about, you know, possibly putting them in harm's way. And, you know, what's he, as a spiritual advisor, what's he supposed to say? I'm going to pass on this one. This sounds kind of risky. You know, yeah. I don't know what they do in that situation, but, you know, I don't know how far he's willing to go. If you, you know, if somebody feels that convicted that that's what they're supposed to do, I'm going to step out here and plug another movie again. I didn't even intend to plug all these movies, but Dead Man Walking, that was a movie, I think in the 90s, with Sean Penn and Susan Sarandon. So you've got, based on a true story, you've got a nun who comes in here, takes all these chances to subject herself to this person that's supposed to be just, you know, scary and rough. And she's there till the end because she believes in redemption. You know, I don't know what you do in that scenario if you feel like you need to be there for that person, but it's going to put yourself at risk. Is there going to be somebody else present, or does he have somebody there with him?
Well, you know, his spiritual advisor will be in the room, but I think also present will be his wife. Now, she's not going to be in that room. She'll be behind a glass. But also, Mrs. Sennett had two sons, and they both plan to attend that execution. Again, they won't be in the room, but they're going to watch that. And I think that, you know, I have some mixed feelings about that too. It's, you know, I think it's going to be very harsh and hard to watch. And, you know, maybe they need some closure on that. I don't know, but, you know, they do feel like enough time has passed. It's been 35 years and this has not been dealt with, and they're just ready. They're ready for something to happen and to move forward. And they are not concerned with Smith suffering, which is understandable, you know, but they feel like their mom really had to suffer at his hand. So it's okay that the tables are turned now.
Yeah. You know, I was about to say, I just can't imagine, you know, how they're feeling, but that goes back to what I said earlier. You can't imagine, and you can't imagine. That's the humanity of it. In looking at all of these different, points here. And did you know, you're talking about people being present, did you know you can volunteer for that? It's like be at executions.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that. When I first heard about that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's pretty twisted. But when I was reading about people, it's almost like, I don't know, I guess they have different reasons of why they do that. That's not going to be something that I volunteer for anytime soon. It's kind of like once you see something, you can't unsee that. But
yeah, I think that would be life changing.
I think so too. But I read about one woman who has done that multiple times. And I'm just thinking, not sure exactly what the drive is there, but maybe it's even could be a practical thing. It could be a spiritual thing. I don't know, but I didn't know. I didn't know that you could actually volunteer to witness these executions. So I guess they'll let anybody in.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I cannot imagine. I don't know why you would be okay with that, but I mean, yeah, there's got to be some reasoning there. It's just that's definitely odd.
Yeah, it is. Well, I have to make this note. We talked about, judges and all this jury. And so 2017, Alabama stopped allowing judges to overrule the death penalty juries in such a way, and such rulings are no longer allowed anywhere in the US. A slew of botched executions in Alabama, including this one, what we're talking about right now with Mr. Smith. So
Right.
it led the state's governor, Kay Ivey, to order a temporary pause in executions while prison officials reviewed their procedures. Miss Ivey lifted the pause after a few months, with prison officials describing some minor changes and a new rule allowing the state more time to carry out executions.
Okay. All right. We're slowing things down, I guess.
All right, I guess since executions resumed, the state has killed two death row prisoners and has not had the kind of problems that plagued its previous attempts.
Well, Mr. Smith had a choice too. Courts require inmates challenging their execution method to suggest an alternate available method. So when lethal injection didn't work, he was fighting that attempt to be executed that way. He had previously suggested nitrogen as his alternative method. But at the time, the state hadn't developed a protocol for nitrogen executions. And I think it was unclear when the state might do so. So there is part of me that maybe wonders, is that the reason why Smith chose that method? Was he thinking he might could buy some time, by suggesting something that didn't have a protocol in place? But I mean, who knows? Whatever that method is, though. It's a curious thing whether there's a protocol in place or not.
Yeah, it really is. It does just immediately just bring to mind all these questions. The bottom line is, no matter how you feel about it, people are curious, and they've always been curious about executions. It's the morbid curiosity factor, and there's a lot of those.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
we'll talk about this one though for today. And people used to you've seen those images in movies and such, people lying in the street for hangings, etc. They want to know, and people can be vicious, they want to see blood, kind of thing. I know back in, I think it was 1928, at Sing Sing Correctional Facility. That's such a big name, like everybody knows Sing Sing. But Ruth Snyder, she was executed by electrocution, and that photograph of that was the first known image of an execution. And so it's interesting. The New York Daily News knew that the prison was familiar with, many journalists from their staff, and so they hired somebody from out of town, Tom Howard. So this is an unknown at the time local photographer from the Chicago Tribune. So, he knew he was never going to get in with a camera. So he straps this, took a single use camera to his right ankle. And I don't know what a single use camera looked like back then, but I'm thinking of the old throwaways, back in the day.
Yeah,
But
right.
so I don't know what that was back then with technology and all. But anyway, he wired some kind of trigger release up his pants leg and got all creative with it. But remarkably, he gets through. He gets on in, and from across the room, he points his toe to the chair and took one photo as Snyder took her last breath. And the camera was rushed to the city, and the film developed overnight. And he was probably pretty proud of himself, I'm guessing.
Oh,
And
yeah.
because he, hey, I've got it. It's not like these days. He's thinking, I'm the one, nobody else has this.
Yeah.
So your editors and the writers and all that, they were all, impressed, and they marveled. It was what's gonna be the most shocking photograph ever made. And anyway, it was Snyder in the chair and the leg of the prison guard to the right, and the image was shot at an angle, so it was cropped and everything, and published immediately with the headline "Dead." And I think that's the kind of thing that's just like, people like that. They like things to be sensationalized. They like that shock factor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a headline that you're going to go on and read. Gosh, I guess they did not do a pat down.
Right.
That man. That's interesting, but
yeah.
that is, it's sensationalized. And I feel like that's kind of where we are as a society, especially in that the deep social media news world.
Oh, yeah.
Everything is sensationalized. And, you get
Right.
that clickbait all the time where you read a headline and then you get into it
Yep.
and it's junk, but
Oh,
it
yeah.
makes you just feel very cautious about what you're listening to and looking at. And so
Yep.
returning to our capital punishment in Alabama, it is a legal penalty. Alabama has the highest per capita capital sentencing rate in the United States, which was very interesting to me.
Yeah.
In some years, its courts impose more death sentences than the state of Texas, which is
Wow.
shocking when you consider, Texas has a population five times as large as Alabama. But Texas has higher rates of execution, both in absolute terms and per capita.
Okay. Yeah. When you say Texas, I'm like, are you kidding me? That's huge.
Right.
Well, the method of execution is lethal injection, unless the condemned requests electrocution or this nitrogen hypoxia. I mean, oh gosh, I've got so many feelings, but it was approved in 2018, but as of 22, it had not been used. So if the selected method, like whether it's chosen by the offender or by default or whatever, is found unconstitutional, the state statutes provide the use of any constitutional method of execution, quote unquote, which
Right.
would likely include hanging. I mean, none of it sounds very, very humane, but, hanging, the gas chamber, or firing squad. Can you believe that's still a thing?
Right. Yeah. None of that seems very appealing. And, how are you sitting in the room and trying to check a box on that? That
Right.
would be very difficult even to think through, but so for kicks, let's go dark for just a minute. What
Okay.
about you? What would you choose?
Okay, so I'm sitting here saying it would be really hard, and it would be, and so I can sit here in the comfort of my own home and safe and innocent, and so I don't have to make these kind of choices. But as soon as you said it, I still knew it would be firing squad.
Well,
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think, I think the true torture is having to think through all of the methods and try to pick what's going to be easiest for you to have to deal with. I think for me, I'm going to say firing squad, but it's not going to look like, me standing there with a bag over my head and some people shooting at me. I'm going to be running. I'm going to be kicking and screaming.
Right. Isn't that like the natural response to just fight? I mean, I think we're meant to fight. And so when you think about making that that final decision, I think that's where that immediate conflict comes to mind. How can I do that? That's not, unless you're, struggling with suicide, you're not going to have that in mind that how are you going to do this? I only say that because I just think that's a little more foolproof, maybe. But
Sure.
yeah, the buildup, I think you're exactly right. That buildup is what would kill you just like bit by bit and make you, really crazy, because just come do it to me in my sleep and don't let me have to think about that all ahead of time. It's just, this is dark stuff. But yeah, I guess that's a firing squad for me if I have to choose.
Well,
Whew.
this is definitely, yeah. Woo. This has been a heavy
Right?
episode. And we aren't done. We're still watching this case
Yep.
unfold as of this recording. Mr. Smith is scheduled to be executed later today. He does have an 11th hour appeal. And so we're watching through that. And we're going to continue watching it. And we're going to be back next week with part two of experimental execution. So make sure that you don't miss it.
Well, listen, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we post exclusive content, contests, and so much more. And of course, you can keep up with our episodes through Podbean or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And as always, if you have a story that sparks curiosity or you have something that you want us to talk about, just shoot us an email to ourcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.